This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. More and more people are employed in middle-wage jobs. Nationally, that group grew slightly between 2001 and 2015, but not many of them live in North Carolina. In our state, middle-wage jobs actually declined during the period, and North Carolina's middle class continues to hollow out. Michael Walden is a professor of agricultural and resource economics at North Carolina State University. He recently released a paper that examines the dwindling number of middle-wage jobs in this state. Michael, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank.
So tell us more about this this fact that North Carolina's economy made a U-turn by some measures. So what indicators are you looking at?
Well, I looked at primarily the wages earned in various jobs, and I won't go into the boring details, but I classified jobs into three categories: high paying, middle paying, and low paying. And I looked at how those the numbers of jobs in each of those three categories changed nationally in North Carolina as a state, and then within the regions of North Carolina. Looked at the period 2001 to 2015. 15 was the latest year we have data for when I did the research. And what I found was that consistent with other studies at the national level, we saw over that time period an increase in jobs, numbers of jobs in all three of those wage categories, but the largest increases were at the top and at the bottom and the smallest in the middle. And that's consistent with other research that talks about a hollowing out of the job market, meaning exactly what I said. In North Carolina, it was the same pattern, except, Frank, that the middle-paying jobs actually went down in the state. And then I looked at about 25 different regions in North Carolina using a census classification. And for the most part, I found the same pattern. I think one interesting aspect of that piece of the research was that many people would probably think, oh, well, I understand we're losing middle-paying jobs in, say, small towns, rural North Carolina, but certainly not in the big cities like Charlotte and Raleigh. And actually, that's true. I did see an increase in middle-paying jobs in those two regions, just as an illustration. But it was small compared to the growth on the two ends. So even cities and metropolitan areas like Charlotte and Raleigh are experiencing this relative hollowing out.
And how – let's stick with the cities for a minute because, again, that's where you would expect to see, you know, a stronger kind of middle-wage jobs. How did that compare nationally with what you saw here in North Carolina?
Well, clearly our big regions, our big metropolitan regions, Charlotte and Raleigh, are growing by leaps and bounds faster than the nation. So the increase in high-paying and low-paying jobs for – I'll stick with Charlotte and Raleigh – was well above those increases at the national level. And the middle-paying increase was actually a little bit higher than the national level. But this is mainly because those two regions are just growing so rapidly. They're among the top growing regions in terms of population and employment in the nation.
All right. Now, let's stay within North Carolina and talk about some of the regional differences or the regional patterns that you found.
Well, one pattern I found, and I spent a lot of time trying to group the various regions, which is always a both tedious and challenging process. But I did find what I call extreme, or I categorize as extreme hollowing out. Several regions, most of them more rural in nature, followed the same pattern of increases at the two ends and declines in the middle, but it was just more exacerbated. And I think this makes sense if you drive around North Carolina, if you were aware of what's happened to the North Carolina economy in the last 20 or 30 years, particularly with the loss of manufacturing jobs, which is classified in my classification system as a middle-paying industry, and it is. You know that people know that we've lost roughly 300,000 Texan apparel jobs. We lost cigarette manufacturing jobs. We've lost furniture jobs as well as others in those middle paying areas, and a lot of those in rural and small town places. So I think that's probably the biggest concern geographically when you look across North Carolina. I think Raleigh and Charlotte, obviously they're growing, they're becoming richer, although we still have this hollowing out. But they can cope with those issues, and they do have issues with related to affordable housing. But in many of those small town and rural areas, they really don't have the resources to cope with that situation. So I think that was one of the more daunting findings that I looked at.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the impact of this hollowing out, as you say, this loss of middle income. And maybe let's stop for a moment to to make a distinction, if there is one, between middle-income jobs and middle-class families. What, is there a distinction to be made here?
You can make a distinction. I think economists primarily stick with the notion of income being the defining feature that distinguishes whether you're high class, middle class, or low class. And I certainly respect highly other professions like sociologists who might take a broader view and include familial characteristics, include attitudes about upward mobility, et cetera. I think that's where you get the difference between middle pane and middle class. But there was a Pew Research, I think you alluded to this, there was a Pew Research study, I think it was last year, that argued that found the same things that I'm finding, but taking a broader view of class. And they argued that for the first time ever in the U.S., the middle class is now less than half of the total number of people in the three classes.
So for your findings, the fact that there are more jobs created at the highest and lowest ends and fewer in this middle range, what's the impact, particularly in those areas where you found the most exaggerated examples?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, lots of impacts. I mean, and these go certainly beyond economics. I mean, economically speaking, it means that if someone starts out in their career at a low-paying job, my first job was $1 an hour and worked in various kinds of manual jobs for about 7 or 8 years, but I always wanted to get ahead, and so I went to school and climbed up the ladder. But if there's not many of those middle rungs in the income ladder, it makes it a little harder. I mean, if you're at the bottom of the ladder in terms of pay and you think, gee, if I want to get ahead, I've got to leap all the way to the top to improve. So that's one aspect. And, of course, sociologists, political scientists, other talk about the middle class. Now we'll use that broader term, being the sort of the glue between the upper and lower classes. I think politically, there are many who have looked at the 2016 presidential election and have made some comments about the impact of what we're talking about on those election returns. So, yeah, I think this is an issue. And I think the bigger concern, and this is where I'm going to plug a new book that I have coming out, and hopefully you'll have me back. I have a new book coming out from UNC Press that's looking at where North Carolina might be in 2050. And I think the bigger concern is we don't see any trends that are going to stop what I found in my research from 2001 to 2015. If anything, we worry that this hollowing out may become even more pronounced.
And, of course, the people at the lower end, where, again, this is a more exaggerated distinction, have less mobility, not only
right.
socially and economically, but physically. They can't go anywhere. There's no
right.
better job for them somewhere else. Let me make a guess here and say that back in the days when you could go from a dollar an hour job to a big time job at NC State, you can that experience played as great a role as education, or they worked hand in hand to move you up the ladder. But these days, to make that leap from low paying to high paying, education would be critical in making the leap, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. As I look at the career of my late father, and he did not have a college degree. In fact, he didn't even finish high school. But he was able to move up from lower paying to middle paying. I don't think we'd say he ever got to top paying. But that was all through experience. That was through apprenticeships, something that we've been talking about in North Carolina. General Assembly just passed some legislation regarding that. But you got to have those jobs, those middle paying jobs, for the apprenticeships to work out. And that's where I have a worry.
Well, so what could the state do about that to fill that gap?
I don't think there's any magic wand the state can do. What I say in my book is that point one is to recognize we've got an issue. And we do have an issue of job creation, where jobs are being created, what kind of training you need for those jobs. Number two, I think what the state needs to do a little better, or academicians need to do a little better, is more minutely track where jobs are being created and where jobs are not being created. And then point three is, I think this is going to put a lot of pressure, Frank, on our institutions of higher learning, community colleges, universities, four-year universities, because they're going to have to respond quickly, I think, to the changing jobs that are in demand and hopefully new jobs being created, move resources around, which is not easy at a university level, and work more closely with businesses. So those would be the three points, because we're not going to turn the clock back.
So within those institutions, as you suggest, program changes and better agility in responding to market changes, But outside, then access to those institutions, making it possible for low-wage people to get in and finish up will be important.
One of the failings, I think, of government, and I say this at the national level because North Carolina wouldn't have the resources to cope with this, is when we have the trade agreements, and they have been certainly good for many people, but clearly wiped out essentially the textile apparel industry in North Carolina. We did not do enough. Government did not do enough to go find people who were displaced and motivate them to get reskilled, because the studies show that largely in North Carolina, folks who were riffed from textile and apparel jobs, laid off, they are now in lower paying service jobs. So I think we knew it needed a better outreach in the future, because I do think, Frank, what's going to happen, we're going to see more and more mid-career people needing to get reskilled and go back to community college and go back to four-year college. That's daunting. I'm middle-aged people. I'm 67. I would not want to go back to school. And even when I was 47, I probably wouldn't have wanted to go back to school. So that's very daunting. So we have to do more outreach, I think, to people who are caught in the middle between these big job changes.
And keep it affordable.
Yes.
My guest is Michael Walden, a professor of agricultural and resource economics at North Carolina State University. You can take a look at his research at our website, stateofthings.org. Michael, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Just ahead, we preview a new play that explores the relationship between religion and sexuality. Stay with us on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.